Hey, do you guys love Film Sack? Well, we do too. If you really love it, though, and you want to see it continue and see it grow and see it stay rad from here until whatever the end of time is, how about supporting us at our Patreon at patreon.com/frogpants? It's the Frog Pants Patreon, a place for you to support the shows you love the most here on the Frog Pants Network. If there's something on our network, including Film Sack, that you love, then give just a little bit over at patreon.com/frogpants.
I'll never understand what possessed my mother to put her faith in God's hands rather than those of her local geneticist. 10 fingers, 10 toes, that's all that used to matter. Not now. Now, only seconds old, the exact time and cause of my death was already known.
Don't eat that. It's Pluto. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack after a week off, and it is the very podcast that mines the very depths of very film entertainment for all of very mankind. Episode 215. My name is Scott Johnson. Joining me tonight, Randy, don't mind me. I just like making out in an alley after I beat up a cop half to death. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott and Brian. It's Jonas from the hospital calling to give you the rest of our genetic testing results. Now, these are the results that we didn't feel it was necessary to read aloud to everyone in the delivery room while you were still covered in afterbirth. Let's see. It says here the baby has a 56% chance of being called a duty head by age 7, a 71% chance of being known as bum face until age 10. Sorry about that. He's got a 79% chance of wetting the bed until age 6 years and 4 months. But good news, his bed will stay dry through the night until the age of 15. Oh, wait, let's skip past that section. He's going to have hairy palms throughout his teens. No, no, wait, that's still the same section. You know what? I'm just going to mail these to you. I'm sure everything will turn out great. Bye-bye now.
That was very Dunaway-like. You weren't lying about that. Also with us, Brian, got 50 bucks, Ibbit.
I was waiting. Thought I'd show up way later in the show. Hey, there's more vodka in this piss than there is piss. And a trace of cranberry. Do I detect subtle notes of sage?
I knew you were going to say that.
That's awesome. Picturing the Ethan Hawke over there taste testing Jude Law's pee. We have no Dunaway today. Dunaway is recovering from a very minor but still kind of kick your butt and make it hurt kind of surgery. He's fine. He wants everyone to know that.
And by the way, I want everyone to know the surgery had nothing to do with his butt. Scott Johnson likes to put the wrong idea in your head.
Yeah, no butt. No butt surgery. Not yet, anyway. This was focused on the face.
Oh, that's right. We have the genetic results for Brian Dunaway. He's going to be having butt surgery.
Right.
Age 49.
50% chance, yeah.
And so, there you go. That's your thing. Oh, what are we doing here? We got a movie to do, I guess. It's Gattaca is the movie. And it's weird because this one was donated to the show by Dominic DeLeo. I want to say his name. Dominic sent us Blu-ray versions of this movie. Mm. And that was super nice. And we love it when people do that. And we're always happy to take a look at what you're sending. Sadly, this one is not streaming for free anywhere that I am aware of. But it is available for rent everywhere. iTunes, Amazon Prime, everywhere else that you get Vudu, all that stuff. It's all available there. In fact, I captured today's clips from a rental of the movie from Amazon Prime. So I know it's out there. You can totally get it. I recommend watching it, especially if you've never seen Gattaca. We'll let Scott Fletcher explain more, but before I do, I really like Gattaca a lot. Like a lot.
Wow. Can't even wait till Fletcher talks about it to say how you feel about it.
Well, let's let him do that. Scott Fletcher, come on in and set a spell.
Gattaca. In a future where status is determined by genetics, a genetically flawed, invalid man conspires to game the system in order to achieve his lifelong dream. In the process, he meets and falls in love with a beautiful valid with a heart defect.
What the heck was that?
I was me dropping a bunch of crap.
Oh, I thought that was in Fletcher's audio.
Fletcher was doing Foley. What happened? You all right? You got it?
Yeah, I apologize. That's what happens when you stack crap too high.
I didn't mean to stick that on Fletcher.
Bleep you!
Sorry, buddy. it is Gattaca, directed by Andrew Niccol. I think is how you would say it, or Niccol. It's Niccol. There's no E or any other accent to make me think it's Niccol. He wrote it as well. It was his first directorial debut. He has made other films, however, that he wrote.
How many other directorial debuts has he had?
That's a good point. Yeah, it is his first ever. Yeah, that's wrong the way I said that, isn't it?
He was a born-again director on his fourth film.
It was determined as a child he would one day direct a movie. He directed this in 1997, and I just think it bears noting some of the other stuff this guy did, because he's kind of a big deal. He is responsible for writing the following films. Gattaca, of course, also his first writing job. The Truman Show, which he did the next year. Simone, which I don't remember, but it was like Robot Lady, right?
Mm-hmm. No, that was it was like a virtual woman that Al Pacino helped create and chatted with.
Yes,
almost like a Her kind of thing, but with a model. Like, I think she was that was what her creation. Well,
And it starred Winona Ryder, but she was not Simone.
No.
Right?
She was someone else. Simone else.
Played Simone.
Simone else.
She was Simone else. Get it? He also wrote The Terminal.
All right.
The Tom Hanks deal.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big deal.
That is a big deal.
You get Spielberg to direct your writing job. That's pretty amazing. Lord of War. That's a really good movie. Nicolas Cage.
Surprisingly
movie.
Good movie.
Yeah, quite good.
Despite Nick Cage.
Ethan Hawke's in that as well. Ethan Hawke's in a lot of this guy's stuff. In Time, which I didn't see. Don't know what's up with that.
That's the most recent, right? That was the one with the...
Well, 2011, but yeah.
Yeah, the guys, everybody in the... Justin Timberlake? I thought there was... Oh, that was right. That's the one where everybody has like a watch built into their wrist or something.
Yeah, that's and it. It. Yeah. Yeah, it's got Siegfried and Cillian Murphy. Yeah. I never saw that.
If you got money, you get to live forever.
Yeah.
Basically, because you stop aging at age 25. Right. Everybody else has to buy life.
The dude clearly likes, I mean, not all his movies are like this, but there are a fair number here that all kind of follow this theme of what ifs. What if technology ran amok, or what if...
But it's what if the in the future horrible class systems come back somehow. I'm surprised this guy didn't make Divergent.
Yeah, like, that seems like a thing.
It seems exactly like his kind of movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you say mammogram, Ibbot?
No, I didn't say mammogram.
I could have sworn you said the word mammogram just now.
What?
Which everyone should go get. I'm not, you know, this is a good time to bring it up.
No, everyone should not go get a mammogram.
Well, some people should. Ladies should, right? So some guys with big boobs should.
I now have this song in my head that goes, whoa, Brian Ibbot, mammogram, just like that.
Whoa, I don't know. Ibbot. I don't know where in the world you heard mammogram.
I could have sworn I heard you say mammogram.
Okay, we're gonna go back and listen to that.
Yeah,
we're
gonna have to go figure that out. Anyway,
I like In Time because it wasn't that good a movie, but the concept is amazing.
Yeah, the concept is cool. Yeah,
man, you hit 25 years old and you get this clock stamped into your arm, and it's bright green or something, and it just that just blows my mind. I want that
Logan's Run-esque too.
Yeah, well, yeah,
and I want it to be like an HBO series.
Yeah, this show Gattaca could be one of those. I feel like Gattaca's got a bit of a Logan's Run complex as well.
Totally does.
Although it's more of a slow, get me the hell off of Earth kind of run.
It's like a Slogan's Run.
Slogan's Run. Nice. You know, who had the best Slogan's Run of all the commercials of our youth? Probably Life Cereal is my guess. The Host. Remember The Host, 2013 Stephanie Meyer epic The Host?
Mm-hmm.
Which did not do very well critically or in theaters, but he wrote that. And then
he wrote the screenplay.
I should say screenplay.
Stephanie Myers wrote it.
Something this year called Good Kill, which I had not heard of. And apparently it came out already in Italy on the 5th of September. I don't know what the deal is here, but this is starring Ethan Hawke.
Or Ethan Hawke. Great.
Yeah. Zoe Kravitz, January Jones. Oh, so it's about a robot.
It's about a drone pilot, right?
Family man begins to question the ethics of his job as a drone pilot.
Yeah, and that's Ethan Hawke, I would presume. Bruce Greenwood's in it. We like him. He's Captain Kirk's. He's Captain Commander Pike in the Star Trek movies, and among millions of other things. Anyway, it looks cool.
So you Scott Johnson, you love The Truman Show, don't you?
I do love The Truman Show. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
how did this guy from New Zealand get this record?
You mean record of writing these kinds of movies?
Of these good movies?
Well, I don't know. You could ask the same question of Weta Studios or Peter Jackson.
Let me rephrase
this.
Whoever. How did this guy who, if you say Andrew Niccol on the street, no one has any idea who you're talking about.
To this day, yeah.
Right.
How did he get this going?
Well,
yeah, because these are all great. I mean, maybe not all great, but I mean, these are all solid movies. Truman Show's great. I'll go out on a limb too and say I really enjoyed this. I'm really glad I got a chance to watch it again because it didn't leave as much of an impression on me seeing it this time or the first time I saw it as it did this time. I really, really enjoyed it.
I agree.
This time.
Something about this time, and maybe it was the high def or I don't know what, but something really got me here. Outside of the, you know, 480p freaking thick monitor screens of the future.
I'm going to argue the other way. I like this movie a lot more 17 years ago than I liked it.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get to that. Here's what I would just say about your point, Randy, and I think it's a good point. There are many directors who make two or three films and then their names become household in very real ways. And there are people you'd never heard of before, but man, they sure landed a sweet deal with some great independent. And now everybody knows the name of Tarantino or everyone knows the name of whoever. I can't think of any others right now, but there's plenty of examples of directors who, you know, who made it big. Brian Johnson, for example, for Brick. Is it Brian? Mm. Well, whatever it is. Maybe I'm disproving my point, but the point is this. This guy is responsible for... He didn't just write a bunch of good movies. He also directed most of them. Gattaca, Simone, Lord of War, In Time, The Minutes, that's a short film, The Host, and A Good Kill, which is this year's thing. And I still think that nobody knows that name. So right. I don't know what the difference is with him. I don't know why you don't.
So let's limit it to directors who became known since 1990.
All right.
Tarantino is a perfect example. Suddenly Pulp Fiction, boom, you know him. Tim Burton, Christopher Nolan.
Good examples all.
Having a hard time with here, but point being.
So you're doing like me, it's hard.
What they seem to have in common is they want to talk about their movies. They want to be a celebrity too.
So they want to be out in front of it.
Maybe they're not like begging to be on the late shows or something, but you know Shyamalan because he's no stranger to answering questions about what he's done. And I'm going to argue that this guy keeps to himself.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've never seen him interviewed. I don't know a thing about him outside of this. His biography stuff is kind of, there's nothing crazy going on here. There's one time on Letterman, he dropped his pants or anything weird. He's just a chill dude. So maybe he doesn't care for all that and just wants to make his art and back off. You know, I don't know. I can admire that if that's what's going on.
He married Rachel Roberts, who played Simone in Simone.
Oh, she's beautiful. Wow.
Yeah.
Nice catch there, buddy. Oh, yeah, look at her. Sheesh.
You okay there, Scott?
Well, what else is she up to?
Need a minute?
Hold on.
89% chance of something.
Is she doing anything else that matters here? No, not really. Is it Wayne? What's her name? Rachel Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm just looking at her. Oh, she's gorgeous.
We're just going to pause this.
She's really pretty. You know what? She's in all of his movies since then. Yeah. That's what she's in.
Well,
she's
there
in
you go.
Truman Show. She's in The Terminal, Lord of War, End Time.
And her IMDb photo makes her left eye look really lazy, but I think that's just the photo.
Yeah, she really doesn't take a bad picture, does she? No. Like you look through her Google image search and it's like, oh, yeah, okay. No bad lighting, but still looks great. Yeah.
So he was born in 64. She was born in 78. That makes her a lot younger than him.
that makes her the Rebecca Pigeon.
Oh.
To his David Mamet.
Oh, look at you with the comparison.
Wow.
I'm trying here. I'm stretching.
That's impressive. That's impressive. This movie contains...
This one goes out to the film snobs.
No, I'm kidding. This one contains Ethan Hawke, Uma Thurman, Jude Law, and a myriad of others. And a bunch of, not cameos, but parts and roles played by people who you absolutely know who they are. And I think you even knew who they were then, but it's interesting to see them pop in these small things. Like Alan Arkin is that gumshoe detective.
But it's our first trope alert of the episode, my friend.
Hold on. Let me pull that out. Right, I got a fresh one right here for you. Here you go.
There's only one woman in the universe. I mean, really? I mean, this movie, This movie has a lot of boys. I'm surprised early on that Ethan Hawke has a mom, because like, as soon as they can get rid of her, she's gone.
I could count a few more. There was the nurse. There was a bunch of just robotic looking Gattaca employees.
There were some customers of various businesses, but there were women. But really, this movie is about seven men and one woman, and she's kind of unimportant. I mean, like, the specifics about her, you never find out much about her. She's just intended to be gorgeous and robotic.
Yeah. And somehow dissatisfied with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that trope, man, I started thinking about all the movies I've seen where you just feel like, gosh, the girl is such an afterthought. There's just one, you know? Like, people love to tell me that Pacific Rim had other women in it. I don't remember any other women in it. There's only one.
Well, one of the robots. One of the robots
she,
was a
robot woman. Was female. She had some boob armor. That's
right. Robo boobs, yeah.
But, like, this movie is a lot like Pacific Rim, that so far as the woman doesn't she's not introduced at the beginning. She's introduced in Act Two. Mm-hmm. You know, she's, again, her backstory is irrelevant and not even touched.
Also, very briefly talked to in Act Two. She doesn't really start showing up till much later, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's only just glances and stuff up to that point where she almost catches him with a bad heart monitor or whatever, and that's about it.
So it's weird to me when you look around a movie and go, well, of course she's the love interest. She's the only interest. Like, they really didn't even, I don't know. I'm
wondering why that is. It's weird because it's not like you couldn't have had any of those other characters, including Alan Arkin's, or it could have been a sister to him instead of a brother. It could have been there could have been a million characters that were female secondaries, and they just didn't have them. It didn't occur to me, but now it's weird.
Alan Arkin's character is just fascinating. Because what you're intended to believe, and I may be getting this from extra material and not from the film itself, but you're intended to believe that he's old enough to have been born before all the genetic manipulation.
We assume he's a normal. I do anyway. That he's, right. Well, not a normal. What do they call him? Faith-based?
Invalid?
Or,
invalid.
God-children?
God-child. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's old enough to have been born before genetic manipulation. Now, genetic manipulation came along and made people much better at doing jobs like being a detective, because they were, you know, born to. So now his boss is like 40 years younger than him, right?
Yeah.
And telling him what to do, except that his boss is usually wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is what an interesting character, and I so wanted to just have one shot of that character just getting home and stepping out on the balcony in the freaking Fifth Ward and just shaking his head like, what did I become?
Yeah.
And you're right. That could have been a female character. It could have been way, way more interesting too.
I like him in it though. And I agree that there could have been more fleshed out there, but I liked what he represented. I liked that he had this kind of old school voice that none of these new kids who thought everything was perfect could understand. I mean, the entire theme of the film is that, and it's being pounded into you at every minute, which is, great. Like, Ethan Hawke's aspiring for this greatness when he was given nothing. Yet the people who have the greatness are miserable sods, especially freaking Jude Law, who, you know, is now a complete alcoholic and can't deal with the fact that he was in some sort of accident, but is perfect in every other way. I mean, what a sad state of affairs that guy represented.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really well done. Like, none of it comes across to me as forced or pandering to me. It feels like there's a part. Okay, the final race with the brother in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I needed that, and I feel like that was filling a hole that a movie needed, which was like this emotional arc just needed to be sewn up or something.
Yeah,
for sure. And it's funny. Did either of you guys watch the deleted scenes by chance?
No, negative. I want to. That sounds great.
You should. And one of them kind of ties up that, which was kind of left as a chicken in the bucket, his brother, with what's going to happen when he gets back. I mean, he's not, you know, he didn't die out there in the water. He's rescued, but that question isn't answered. Like, great, what's going to happen now with his brother?
Yeah.
And the presumption is that, well, his brother's not going to do anything. Well, the deleted scenes, one of them has Anton going back to Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
And Alan says, you know, I interestingly enough, that Eyelash came back with a lot in common with your DNA. So you've got a lot to answer for, and I think if you know what's good for you, then we're just going to close this thing up right here and not bring it up again. So it's kind of like a nice little way to wrap up that.
Why didn't they go with something more subtle like that? And that is more subtle, by the way.
It is. Oh, for sure.
Having this beat you over the head movie, like, it really does. Like, I kept thinking about it the whole movie. Like, why are they swimming out to? This is the dumbest test of brother fighting I've ever seen. And I just thought, maybe they won't do it again. Maybe they'll leave that in the, you know, at the beginning of the movie. And then
the beginning one makes sense to me. And that's why maybe I don't have as big a problem with it. Because the beginning bit is something kids would do.
Now think about it. They go swimming in this stupid test that they do. And Vincent is so driven that he wins to the point that he has to save his perfect brother's life, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How awesome would it have been if that had scarred that perfect brother for a long, long time? And then when all this other stuff happens later and he realizes, oh my gosh, I'm chasing down my brother. He's standing out in the rain in the alley going, Vincent! Like screaming, right? Like, how awesome would it have been if he would have remembered what had happened as kids and that shaped what happened at the end rather than going swimming again? Oh, wow.
It was a little, I agree with you. That was a little much. And it didn't give me, I mean, I feel
like
it's
a closure that it was probably intended to be.
Sure. And as kids though, I mean, there were a lot of things about the way that looked that worked for me. So for example, choppy water away from the coast, that all works well to build up the fear that this must be in somebody who's weaker than the other. But also he gets left in the dust and is made to just sort of float on his back among the worst looking seaweed and gross freaking refuse of the sea ever. That freaks me out in a very primal way. I am not a fan of like deep water with like seaweed in it. Ugh, dude, touching you and stuff. I hate that stuff. So all of that stuff feeds into that whole childhood. It's terrifying. You go back and you're an adult and it's much smaller than you thought it was, that kind of stuff, you know? And then later, it just didn't pay off for me that way.
They live in a world where there's some really creepy stuff in everyday life.
Yeah.
Like getting your blood tested as you walk into the bank and, you know, like all these things. Yeah. And so I'm just like, that just doesn't pay off is my problem, because you spend this whole movie trying to convince me that in a world where there are these really enforced class systems, that the people in those systems would be loyal to the system rather than each other. And that's never been the case in all of human history.
No, that's true. But I feel like they tried to see, none of that was a problem for me, because I felt like they, like Dark City does this kind of, they almost create a dreamlike state in your movie where nothing feels exactly rooted in reality. And that helps with the suspension of disbelief, but also, you know, Tony Shalhoub showing up and going, well, I'm running a racket on the side, Shane. I'm putting together these normals and non-normals. Same here. And then so he's got all these plans. I don't know why I didn't have voice, but I mean, the whole movie's got like a noir feel to it anyway.
He's the Peter Stormare of Minority Report.
and there again, I'm
he
like,
he totally is, dude. Oh, he totally is. He didn't have eyes to give.
Right.
But he had.
And he didn't have a grudge.
No. And he wasn't sick and blowing snot on everything.
I'm there thinking, why wasn't that like Kate Mulgrew? How cool could that character have been if they just allowed some girls on the set?
Yeah, I would. Like, I could have gone for more.
I didn't get to Tony Shalhoub. He didn't really.
Hold on. Tony Shalhoub? Is that how you
say it? I love that.
No. This is not me criticizing. That is a badass way to say Tony Shalhoub.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm loving that.
I don't care how you say his name. I'm saying that that was like a wasted casting. And that I say that because I have seen him in 100 episodes of Monk, right?
Right.
And so I know what he can do. And that was not it.
For me, it would have been 100 episodes in, what was that show? Or he was at the wings. Airport wings. That's wings, yeah. You know, I saw way more of that than I ever did Monk. But so every time I see him, I just think wings and that guy sitting at a bar being weird. But
whereas the small part casting of Xander Berkeley as the "you go get him, Vincent" doctor. Oh my gosh!
I like that guy though.
Perfect casting.
I like that guy.
Perfect.
Oh yeah.
I was bothered by the fact that we had to start their whole relationship with him admiring Vincent's penis.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, he really did admire
that
it.
Didn't go anywhere? Well,
dude,
did
he's Todd from Terminator 2. Remember?
Yeah. Oh, right. He totally is.
Got a T-1000 through the milk
in
carton.
The face. Yeah,
right.
Through, that's right.
Right in
that's
the face. Right. Went right
through
into the
milk
mouth,
carton. Right
back of his head.
There's a great deleted scene, like an outtake that he has on that on the Blu-ray as well with him. Well, I won't tell you. It's very much worth seeing.
Really? Okay.
But it's an outtake that you don't see coming.
All right. Since I did all the capturing on the other, I haven't actually been able to watch it proper on the Blu-ray, but I will because that sounds good to me.
It's hilarious. Yeah.
I like the Xander Berkeley guy. He was in the second season of 24, which I have still not seen.
Yeah. It's great on there. He's also he's a very villainous SS agent. Spoiler in. Get off my plane. That movie.
Right.
Air Force One.
Yeah, he goes out a very bad way in that movie. That kind of became his thing, though. This is like the most nice guy role I've seen him in. He's usually a complete dick.
He's the guy who gets his comeuppance at some point during the film. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to say he may be in that documentary where, what's it called? That guy from that thing or whatever it's called.
You Know Me From something like that.
It's something like that. It's a documentary about all these character actors that you know every time you see them, but you never know their names.
But and this movie and didn't really have a bunch of character actors that you don't know. Like Blair Underwood was in this movie. Mm-hmm. Maya Rudolph was in this movie.
Yeah. Super briefly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so weird how they managed
to. I had to go back. As soon as I started naming the credits, I had to go back and say, oh, yeah, she's in one. She has one line way far away from the camera to where. Okay, I guess that's Maya Rudolph.
Well, it would have been 97, well before her SNL time.
Oh, right? Yeah, for sure.
I think she wasn't until early aughts or whatever.
And might I say, two underscores, Gore Vidal was in this movie.
Yeah, he was. He was great. Oh, I love Gore Vidal. Big fan.
Again, I'm saying that could have been played amazingly by any number of older women, but oh my gosh, he acted in so few things. I don't know what got him into this movie, but man, he was amazing.
Well, don't forget about the culpable Ernest Borgnine in his role.
Yeah.
Got 50 bucks.
Got 50 bucks.
So the best part about him was they made us assume a lot about the transition from worker to going home, meeting Jude Law, going through that process and applying. I think there was supposed to be a lot of unspoken Borgnine behind the scenes helped make this all work for him because he knew who he was.
Well, and there's a big problem with a story like this, isn't it? Because the more people who know what you're doing, the more at risk you are of being caught.
Yeah.
But you need as many people as you can stand helping you to do this sort of grand, decades-long conspiracy, right?
Uh-huh. And you need Borgnine to say, that's just trash, when really there's some evidence in there he's trying to hide.
Yeah, so I kind of wish the movie had given us some more evidence so that we would understand, rather than leaving us to just wonder. Because there's things that it's fun to just wonder about, right?
Yeah,
like the movie is completely overwhelmed with staircases. There's staircases in so many shots. And when finally, what's his name? Jude Law's character.
Vincent.
Vincent.
Oh. Well, Jerome.
Sorry, Jerome. Vincent. The real Jerome. Yeah.
When finally Jerome has to flop out of his wheelchair and climb up his staircase that looks exactly like the illustration of DNA.
Double helix chair.
I did not
everywhere.
Even make that connection.
Yeah. It is all driven home, right? Like the name of the movie is the letters that we use.
Right. Now that I got, and I got, Eugene. Eugene.
Eugenics, all that whole thing.
But also like you got to leave some things for the audience to figure out. Right.
Yeah.
And this thing with Ernest Borgnine's character is the thing that I felt like needed to be explained. And maybe they could have left us to figure out his relationship with Uma Thurman a little more. There was too much of that. I didn't need to Didn't need to see them.
They were fine. I mean, they ended up being a couple. That's one thing. By the end of this movie, they became a couple and eventually got married. They're not together now, I don't think, right?
Ooh, nope.
That broke off.
Oh, yeah.
Because yeah, she's with, what's his face? Footman.
Yeah, Footman. There was no feet shots in this of her, I noticed.
Well, that's right.
She hadn't quite met the man of her dreams yet. This is interesting. While it had been identified that Gattaca uses four DNA nucleotide abbreviations, GATC, that's why they keep using it in the credits. More specifically, when identifying genetic markers, the tests measure short tandem repeats at specific DNA marker locations. These are known as GATA or CA repeats, hence Gattaca. That's where they got the name. So there was a lot. My point is there was a ton of this, like the double helix staircase and this other sterile thing or whatever. What really took me out of the movie, the only thing that did, honestly, most of it I think holds up visually. I like the idea that everyone's hybrid electric car looks like it was made in the 40s.
And oh, yeah, that Studebaker. Yeah,
I love that stuff. Oh.
Yeah,
love
that stuff. And the what was the thing in the beginning? The Riviera that he was conceived in. That, now, that is a beautiful car.
Beautiful car. All of them. I love all that stuff. That stuff's great. I love that the bar they went to could have been taken right out of some speakeasy in 1923 or something.
Such great visuals, I think, in this. With the,
really
the
pretty. So they got noir. The mix of modern and then the 40s noir stuff and old town mixed with new city. Like, that stuff's really compelling. What took me out was the computers. That just killed me.
What was the film that we saw, Equilibrium? This had a very a lot in common with Equilibrium, with the industrial look.
Yeah, I would say Equilibrium to some degree, Minority Report, maybe a couple others we've seen all kind of share this aesthetic
pedigree.
And I think it's good. I think it's when I whatever, for whatever reason, I respond to it. The only problem I have with it is that these things tend to, like the finger scanners, they're fine, like all that stuff's fine, but the minute you decide that in the future computers, the biggest screen anyone's going to have is 12-inch and it's all going to be 4x3, I mean, it's all in retrospect, I get that, but that just drove me up the banana wall. And it wasn't even like like the quality of the screens
didn't just drive you bananas and did not just drive you up the wall. It drove you up the banana
That's right,
wall.
Up the banana wall.
But can I want to jump on that with a trope. This is
Hang on here. While I was thinking about active matrix screens, I lost my trope. Oh, here we go. Go.
Everybody drinks. Everybody smokes. Everybody's got these horribly bad habits in a universe where perfection has been It was just right before the changeover in Hollywood and smoking disappeared. Like, this is one of the very last films, right?
Maybe this is supposed to be all vapey and stuff. Maybe that was the future they were.
If only they'd predicted that. How awesome would that have been?
That would have been pretty cool. Right. Or better yet, the way I look at it is, or one could look at it this way. Those cars, for example, that all sounded like, you know, they were like Jetson car.
Yeah.
But they look like, you know, a Studebaker. Yeah, you could throw that in there and say, yeah, the smoking's just, you know, that's a motif and they're really into that look now. And, you know, everything comes back around. So maybe that's all just fake. I don't know. But yeah, they were definitely trying to squeeze out of this. And it's an effective thing to say, all right, our movie's set in the future. You either predict it all and have like bad jumpsuits and shitty looking everything and hope that that doesn't look bad in 10 years, or you go back to something people know, and the conceit is that everything, you know, these styles came back into vogue. And I think I'm okay with that. I think that's an okay way to handle that, you know? And plus, again, it gives it this kind of dark city. Oh my gosh, we need to do Dark City on the show.
We do need to do Dark City.
I want to talk about that movie so bad with people. Mm-hmm. But I kind of kept getting that vibe off of it. Not nearly as dreamlike or as, you know, artificial world as that one was meant to be, but there's still something there that was very Dark City about it. And I like that. I liked it a lot. Yeah. To fully assume Jerome's identity, Vincent was supposed to be 5'11", okay, in the show there, or the movie. Yeah. He undergoes extension surgery in his legs to match Jerome's recorded height of 6'1". But in reality, Jude Law and Ethan Hawke, both 5'11".
Oh, man.
That's funny.
Boy, did they gloss over just how horrific that would be.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, like, having that
he's
done.
Like, he's like, no, I won't do that. That's the one thing I will not do. Okay, I'll do it.
It's not even okay, I'll do it. It's okay, done it. Yeah.
All right, fine.
Yeah, and then there's no way I'm doing that. Then you hear the saw, then he's laying on the floor.
Right. And then it's like, we need a montage.
Montage.
And he's fine.
We had a lot of that.
This is a guy who is almost killed by a treadmill. All right. You're telling me he's just going to breeze through having four bones broken and regrown?
That was an issue. A little flaw that I thought with the film was that, you know, that issue with the treadmill and being out of breath and just basically getting waylaid when he got back to the locker room. Yet the swimming didn't seem to take that out of him. A lot of the other physical stuff that he was doing didn't seem to take it out of him. But for whatever reason, the treadmill was.
Also, you assume that treadmill thing isn't a once a year test. It's all the time. You just have your workout time at work.
Yeah.
Why do we, this is the silliest investigation ever. Because it keeps reminding you that this, and every time they return to, we're going to catch this kid, you're reminded that he is back home scrubbing with a freaking loofah, like mad. And like, that isn't going to do. Okay. Unless you're coming to work every day red and blistered. I just don't understand. How are you accomplishing anything?
Yeah,
with this?
I kept expecting that. I'm like, my skin, if I do that kind of treatment on it every day, I would be a red hamburger mess.
Your skin would be so tender to the touch and just breeze out.
It's such a cool idea, though. Like in the beginning, I gotta give some props to that opening sequence, the opening credits with giant toenails and fingernails hitting the ground, just gung gung. Just
really.
Turning small into big, I think, is
that
really
make
cool.
You want to just stop the movie right then.
No, I thought it was cool. And hair follicles all close like that, that's really trippy to me. I mean, I don't know, it's gross shedding of human tissues and things, but it's that I like perspective changes, and having that be just ginormous with huge sound effects was interesting. They kind of had me at that.
They didn't have me. I was like, what in the world?
Yeah, and this idea that in the future, so there's some ideas that don't hold up for me as much as I want to make this clear, really, really like Gattaca a lot. I think it's an awesome movie. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend it. And I'm going to watch it again with Kim and the kids because I just want to see it again. I mean, I usually don't do that with film sack. So I will say this, though. The idea that we find this human perfection by essentially just eliminating genetic tendencies and sort of, you know, thinning the herd in a preemptive way. Why would that mean that our work spaces would all be this perfectly mathematical, symmetry based, like lines of desks with exactly the same everything? We all do exactly the same motions all day. That would just turn us into automatons and, you know, robotic people.
Right.
Doesn't these hold people, up to me.
These are supermen.
Yeah.
What's going on?
That's a weird, like, combining. I guess what I'm saying is, that, and I understand why the movie had to do it, and you had to establish the feeling that this is bad, and what we have done, at least as posited by the director and the writer, that this is a bad thing, that human beings would get to a place where they've forgotten, you know, what it means to be unique or what it means to have chance in your life, and which I agree on a lot of those levels. But to then throw in there, and we'll become way more totalitarian as a result, doesn't carry water for me. It's not the same thing.
It's two very different things. Result, right? Yeah.
They're not attached to one another. So this regimentation, I don't think goes along with it. What instead I think what you'd have is wildly different kind of future with very diverse ways of getting things done, and not just, all right, everybody in a line, have your finger pricked and sit down at your desk.
Well, especially when you juxtapose that with the fact that this is a movie about a main character who is insanely lucky. He is the luckiest person that ever done lived. And I realize that he's genetically very unlucky. Like, you find that out right at the beginning of his life. But from then on, everything that could go against him, he somehow skirts over and over and over, including, by the way, the trope of the useless police who... Mm-hmm. My gosh, they spent so much of the movie just focused on capturing Vincent when he didn't actually do it.
No, he didn't actually do it.
What's going on?
Well, they found that eyelash, right? And so they figured that was him at the scene. And so it just seemed, I think it just kept in keeping with it. Like, well, the only person that would do a dastardly thing like this must be an imperfect or somebody who was, you know, genetically whatever. Here's the other question. If Gore Vidal, if Alan Arkin is old enough to be before the genetic manipulation, surely Gore Vidal was. That guy's 1,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I wasn't buying that for a minute.
Absolutely. That's the thing. Like you were saying, oh well, it's understandable that they would go after the invalid. Wait a minute. It's understandable to you, but to them, it shouldn't have been.
Right.
To them, with their perfect technique and their special science and everything, they should have caught Gore Vidal really quickly.
Yeah.
It's just weird that they're so bad in this, again, in this universe where Vincent is so lucky.
Well, and you can start peeling back that onion, you start realizing, oh, well, let's see, if you picked your finger every day to get into work, you are going to destroy your fingertips.
It's going to be like calloused. And
Let me give you another layer of the onion. This is a class where, man, these people interact with doctors a lot. Mm-hmm. And there's only one doctor for him ever.
Yeah, I like that it's him, too, just because I like that actor. I just like that he's the only guy. Come on in. Take a pee. Mm-hmm. Let me have your pee. Go make a stool sample, whatever I need. But the idea that we would have all of these scanning techniques or these abilities to do these things, but that guy was killed with a keyboard in a room that in that future surely had surveillance
like
of some
kind. Like
a bunch
of cameras, yeah. Yeah, they never even touched on like the always watching angle. You'd think that would kind of be a thing where they're always taking blood samples, if they're always, you know, all this protection to get in there, always monitoring your health, always making you run on a freaking treadmill.
Yeah.
You'd think that they'd also have like cameras, at least in the break room, make sure you're not pounding down Twinkies.
Or in the gym when you go back in there and have a near heart attack because you just...
Right in the locker room.
Yeah, like all those things don't hold up. But again, I'm just arguing in this. I don't know the name for it and I am no film student, but I swear to you, this is their intentional dreamlike appliance. It's like them saying... Look, if you really want to figure out why Truman, you know, how is it possible Truman didn't notice his world was an artificial one in the Truman Show, you can pick that apart. But the movie is successful, and I think this one, I would argue, too, is pretty successful at putting up this mirage that you kind of just buy into because the dreamlike state of it is making you go there. You're not questioning it because you're already like, oh, it's like the 40s. These guys love this style. The 40s in that car is definitely not a Studebaker, but... It sounds like a space car, but it looks like a Studebaker. And while that's all happening, you're forgetting that there are no surveillance cameras, that no one seems to talk about those things. Like, in a weird way, I feel like it's like a magic trick. And this director's doing a pretty good job of pulling that trick off.
For you. And that's,
for me.
The real difference between you and me is I'm spending this whole movie going, when did he write this? How could he have not known the internet was already around in 1997? Like, you know, like I'm not expecting you exactly to predict Google, although I'd like to point out The Fifth Element came out in 1997 and Luc Besson perfectly predicted Google. He has Lilou sit in front of a computer and learn everything.
Yeah.
In a scene, how interesting would this film have been?
He predicted Lynda.com.
Yeah, I was gonna say he predicted Encarta 1.0.
Right. Yeah. She asked Jeeves rapid fire.
Yahoo Answers.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. She made Hotbot burn.
Google bada boom.
It's a good point.
Maybe he wrote this thing in the 80s and just could not stand to, you know, change anything.
But you never once go, I wonder what work they're doing at those desks. Well, that's because the movie doesn't want you to know. But if you did really think about it, what did you ever see anybody doing there? There was a picture of the guy they thought had killed a dude that was just hovering there in front of everything, which is really lame if you got a window you can't close. But also, like, some kind of weird flyover of some planets. Mm-hmm. That's what work is everyone doing. There are hundreds of dudes in there. Mm-hmm. If they're not preparing, like, okay, so the idea is, most of them are preparing to get onto they're all planning on being on that rocket, right? Well, she's not, but she works there. She couldn't because she has a heart that's supposed to die at 99.
You know, it's like NASA. You know, not everybody's an astronaut, but the people who work there are doing NASA things.
Yeah.
You know, like determining.
See how that's already falling apart? Because it's so kind of this movie is just full of it. Like, what are they? They're all what they're doing there is looking good, Scott. That's what they're doing there.
I'll tell you what
they're doing. Yeah. They're discussing whether or not Pluto should be a dwarf planet or an apple.
Right. Yeah. Now, I'll tell you what gave me this is a new segment on the show, the excuse me moment.
Excuse me.
It's the thing that says, hey, hold on a second. Make sure you know you're watching a movie here. It's back when Pluto is still a planet, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. everybody with all this advanced science and everything. Pluto's still a planet. It's not just a heavenly body that's not big enough to be a planet yet, but this is still a planet. And right. That's when you go, oh, yeah, movie. I'm in a movie.
It's kind of that aw moment. Like, aw.
No, Pluto. It's too bad, man. You love Pluto. There's nothing wrong with Pluto. That's why Scott Fletcher said this.
Don't eat that. It's Pluto.
See? Yeah, that's right.
And my excuse me moment in this movie is the business where you take your new lover's cup and they tell you all about him genetically by examining the skin cells he left on it.
Yeah. Or the makeout lady when she said she gave that guy a big kiss and wanted to know about it.
Because that's now a reality, and you're not going to the store. You're mailing it in. You're picking up a vial at CVS. Come on.
Yeah. But also, okay, this may change, but currently it would be very illegal for you to go to a place and say, hey, I just made out with a dude. Test my lips so I can see what his genetic tendencies are.
Right. You can totally see that happening.
Yeah.
I've looked at those DNA self-test kits. I don't know what would prevent you from, say, testing your lover.
Right.
I mean,
you better take a sample of my hair too. And
yeah, no doubt. My sister did that. She did one of these as more of an experiment. She doesn't really care about the results, but she did one of the ones. I don't remember what it's called. Anyway, one of the controversial ones that was on all over the news when it happened, when those guys came out, and now they're severely restricted or something. Like something came up. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah. Like when they first started, you could find out all sorts of crazy stuff about yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, we don't really want to know.
And so I a lot of that suddenly brings really sinister if you look at it through the lens of Gattaca, you know. But also, I mean, I don't know. Let's look at it this way. If it was this easy to just poop out a kid and then immediately, oh, here's the other thing. They would have known all this before that kid was born, by the way. That's the other thing. You just do amnio tests, which they do now, and they can say, oh, your baby's got spina bifida, or oh, your baby's going to be Down syndrome or whatever. They can tell that immediately. So the idea you got to wait for it to be out and the mom to be laying there covered in, her, in as you put it, her afterbirth to determine all these things is all kind of ridiculous and dumb. But but again, I feel like it's a movie that did a good enough job of giving me a world to live in and felt breathable and interesting that I tend to forget about those things. In the right movie. Plenty of movies do it wrong, and I am, and then it's just big red lights everywhere going, how'd you do that?
And I want to make very clear, this movie could have been so much worse. Believe me, this is not that bad as I'm making it out to be.
No.
It's just that there
it is really just like a handful of little, you know, little factual errors and mispredictions that kind of take you out of the movie. But
yeah.
It's solid. I think it's a very enjoyable film.
As movies like this goes, I feel like it's strong for the things it's trying to do. I remember feeling this way in Brick. I'm sorry, not Brick. Looper, same director. Ryan Wilson, or Ryan, whatever his name is.
Johnson.
He spells his name R-I-A-N. Anyway,
yes.
I never forget that, but I never remember his last name. I loved Looper. And I remember you and I, Brian, talked about Looper the day after it came out or something. Or one of those
It was the day after I rented it on Netflix.
Something like that. And you hate...
Watched it.
Not that you hate, but you have a problem with time travel movies because they never do it right or they screw that up so much. And it's so easy
Right. Looper. God, I was confusing with Brick with that with the film noir.
Oh, yeah. Brick is awesome.
Brick. Yeah.
Freaking love Brick. Same director. But anyway, Looper was one of those movies where, again, I was kind of oblivious to the things I normally find obvious and annoying about time travel movies because I feel like the shroud they built around it was really strong, and then I forget, and I don't pay attention to the little niggly things till later. Mm-hmm. That's really successful filmmaking for me when you can give me enough emotional scenery, right, to have me forget that what they just did with time travel is completely garbage.
It's the distracting thing. It's like, you know, when magicians wave their hands.
Yeah, it's the other hand.
There's nothing in this hand right here.
Yeah.
And by the way, let's just brush aside the time travel problems right here.
It's like I'm looking at Penn when I should be looking at Teller.
Yes, exactly.
And when they do that right, I'm always really tickled by
that. You're always looking at Teller.
Well, can I tell you, by the way, a complete tangent on that. What a fantastic show Fool Us with Penn and Teller is.
Oh, yeah.
It is so damn well done. This is what reality game show competitions
should be. Wait, what is this on? Is this
should
a
be.
Thing?
It's on currently. It's filmed in England, and it's magicians getting up on stage doing tricks in front of Penn and Teller, who then have a couple minutes to figure out how they did it. And what's cool about it is when they know how they did it, they reveal just enough about it to let the magician know that they figured it out. but not enough to give it away to everybody else who's watching.
Oh,
it's
that's
really,
cool.
really well done. Yeah. So what I'm straight to his attention.
So to that. Beat Penn and Teller, you have to come in with something that is just baffling. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do things that aren't. And I think it's funny. Like some of the things that I enjoy the most, I'm like, I know exactly how they're doing that with the duck and the chicken, but it's, man, that's entertaining. Mm-hmm. And then these guys come in there and do something just outrageous that there's no way anybody's going to figure it out. And you spend so much time being baffled that you don't appreciate the trick as much.
Right. Because you're trying to do the same thing. You're sitting there trying to figure it out just like Penn and Teller would be doing. Anyway, I didn't mean to get us on that.
Just real quick, though, where can people see that show?
It's on TV.
It's on television?
CW? It's on the CW?
It's on the TV.
Okay. It's on the TV.
CW.
All right. CW. Is
and probably streaming somewhere for you cord killers.
That's me. I've killed my cord. Right. I'd like to see it somewhere else.
CWTV.com. Right?
Well, there you go. Is that what that is? That's all Pretty Little Liars and bullshit like that, isn't it?
Freaking hate that. This is the one bright spot in the CW.
Arrow's really good. I'll give him Arrow.
Oh, that's right. You got to watch Arrow. I've got that box set from a listener, by the way. But, you check out.
Yeah, every time my wife's like, ooh, a new season of Pretty Little Liars. I'm like, ooh, chance for me to be in the other room for the next month because I hate that show. And this is the sound I make. All right, moving on.
Speaking of
yeah,
magicians,
looks like you can watch full episodes on CWTV.com.
Okay,
yes.
All right, great. Yes,
So when it comes to magicians, if you've got a favorite magician who isn't Penn and Teller or David Blaine, and you name that person, whoever you're talking to has never heard that before, right?
Depends. If it's
David Copperfield?
You say Copperfield. You say Chris Angel. You could say, well, I don't say Chris Angel.
Please don't say Chris Angel.
I forgot David Copperfield's still alive.
Yeah,
wow.
Oh, yeah, he's with us. Yeah. He's fine, isn't he?
Doug Henning? Oh,
how about nobody knows that guy.
Mandrake?
Houdini? Mandrake. Doctor Strange. I can't think of
the giant Kreskin. Wait, what was his name?
Oh, you know, actually Randy J is my favorite. Or Ricky J?
Ricky J.
He is my favorite.
Ask me this question. Which of all the magicians currently known today for their magicianry do I think is the biggest douchebag?
Chris Angel. I can guarantee you're going to say Chris Angel.
Yeah, Chris Angel's a total douche, that guy.
Yeah. Chris Angel is what the Ben Stiller character is modeled after in, was it Burt Wonderstone or?
Yeah.
Was it? Wait.
Or am I mixing up two movies?
It reminds me of who he is in Dodgeball, but I'm sure that's not who he was doing in there.
And who he was in Zoo.
You know, now that you mention it, anytime he plays that jerk character, it's kind of that same guy.
The same.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Zoo guy.
Pretty much.
My favorite magician, now I'm using air quotes here, for a long time was the Amazing Jonathan. And I'm disappointed that he has to retire. Mm. I wish he didn't have to retire.
Oh, I don't know who it is.
You don't know the Amazing Jonathan?
No, it's not ringing a bell.
Isn't he? He did a lot of live stuff. Like he had a show, didn't he?
He's been on Las Vegas.
Like Dave Coulier.
Yeah, he's been on the Strip for 20 years.
He's a Vegas guy then.
Yeah,
Vegas guy. I like Matt King on the Strip. He's great.
Oh, Matt King, the matinee show to beat all matinee
It's
shows.
Really fun. I got it to go on stage with him, and he had weird breath. That's one thing I remember about him. He had really, really weird breath. And it wasn't necessarily bad breath, and it definitely wasn't fresh breath. It was like some weird breath, like a strange alien-to-me breath. Never smelled breath like that before. Huh. Really weirded me out.
So Amazing Jonathan was one of the first guys to do a bunch of fake, like, nailing things to his face and this kind of thing, like this like shock humor comedy stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like Schwood. It's probably a protege of Schwood, or Schwood is a protege of him.
Oh, I'll guarantee you Brian Brushwood knows Amazing Jonathan's act front and backward. Mm. And a couple of years ago came down with the cardiomyopathy and decided that it was time to start looking to retire. And he finished his, like, he had been at Bally's for 2 decades, finished this long run at Bally's, closed up shop, and then a couple months ago went to the Magic Castle here in L.A. Yeah. And did, like, 2 or 3 nights only before, you know, sold out, 100% sold out before riding off into the sunset. And I just think that's how a magician should go out, right there.
What does cardiomyopathy, what does that do?
So heart condition. Right.
Yeah, I've heard on the cardio.
It's a deterioration of the heart, like the tissue itself
starts to fall apart, kind of thing.
Right. So you are going to die when, you know, like it's just
like an early age deal, or you get a transplant or something. All right.
So amazing.
I don't like it when magicians die, because magicians should have a trick. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I know that sounds weird and childlike, but I remember hearing about a magician dying when I was a kid and thinking, well, that, how does that work? They're magicians. Mm-hmm. Just freaking fix it. Still a little part.
Unless they die while they're doing a trick.
Well, like then, yeah. Sawing them in half or something weird like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I brought up the whole magician thing. I brought
Usually
the whole...
they're not sawing themselves
no,
in
not
half.
Normally, but there's your problem, but, see?
Yeah. You're right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
My favorite magician, my favorite, like, big showman magician has always been Lance Burton. And I bring it up to say, have you noticed that these guys are great showmen? Like, they have these huge acts. They entertain millions of people over a career. You don't really see them in movies much.
Nope.
Why is that?
You see Penn and Teller occasionally cameo or something. But these other guys, especially the kind you're talking about, the glorious hair and the skin's a little tanned and, you know.
Yeah.
Who's the guy? Who's the really tan actor?
George Wallace?
Yeah, no.
George Hamilton. Well,
not George Hamilton. Sorry. Yeah,
let me just say, George Wallace is very tan.
Extremely tan.
Yeah, he's as tan as you get.
I'm sorry.
Yes, George Hamilton. That's it. They all remind me of him for some reason. All those particular guys, especially Lance Burton. Mm. Is it Lance Burton? Well, anyway.
Yeah, Lance Burton is the only one, actually, because the rest of them are all weird. Like, no, it's like they're all weird looking. They're all funny. They all make fun of how they look. Like, even Chris Angel, his perpetually emo 20-year-old thing is not intended to be glamorous.
No.
Right?
It's starting to look weird.
Jim Carrey, by the way, was the Chris Angel character in Burt Wonderstone. I was getting my douche is confused.
I did not see that movie.
Douchebags.
That movie did so poorly. I just avoided it. Is it any good? Was it worth seeing?
It's entertaining. It's worth seeing for sure. And there's you know, it's very 40-year-old virgin esque as far as like the obvious jokes with a couple of like, oh, it's pretty clever, but can probably pretty much predict the whole thing.
That thing Rotten Tomatoed out at 36% from critics, 33% from viewers. Like, nobody liked that thing. And I was wondering.
Oh, now I want to watch it on FilmSack.
Right? I'd do that on FilmSack, sure.
Sure.
Why the heck not? I don't know why I burped just then. back to this here movie here. So I probably already said this. I just like the concept of, you know, both guys having the same problem at the same time, but on different sides of it. Mm-hmm. Just this, the Jude Law juxtaposition is strong for me.
Together, and they make one whole person.
Kind of, yeah. Like, one is just damn set on, you know, not being held back because of how he was born. And the other one is dead set on not allowing himself to find some satisfaction because his legs broke. Or he's paralyzed from the waist down. But to let that, you know, be the end of it all, it's just such a, what's it like? It's like people... You know, people with very little money find happiness in family or something else, and people with a ton of money are miserable. Mm-hmm. To me, it's that same kind of weird, that weird thing, you know, where one side's sure that what he thought was important is important, and what the other guy thinks is important is important, and both are kind of right and wrong at the same time. I don't know, I really like that. That worked out good.
I think it would have held up better if I hadn't been bludgeoned in the face with him crawling into the incinerator. Oh,
that was a little rough.
I saw this movie 15 years ago and I totally forgot about that. And when it happened, it was like watching it for the first time and I'm going, what?
And he's so miserable that's the only way to close that character.
I just feel like if he was so miserable, he should have done it a long time ago. Like waiting till the end. What's the point? Just kill yourself before Shaloub showed up or Shaloub or whatever.
I don't know how you say it, but it wasn't depicted that way. It was depicted like, oh, well, now that Vincent's gone, now that he's going on a rocket wearing a three-piece suit, I guess I have nothing to live for. I've peed nonstop for two straight weeks,
right?
And I'm just going to use the incinerator. What?
Set yourself on fire. Well, it depends on how quick it is, like how fast it is. And I would answer that my own question with, not fast enough, because you still could see his lapel and his silver medal sitting there. And I'm like, if that's visible, you took the wrong way out, buddy.
Yeah, that's slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. climb back up the double helix DNA ladder again and hurl yourself off of that or something, because you need a quick way. Ooh.
Remember when we talked about how you'd want to go if you could choose the manner of your death? Yeah. None of us wanted fire.
Yeah. No, nobody. Who wants fire? Fire and drowning. Both those are off my list. Take them off. I don't want to drown. I don't want to be. In fact, hey, how about this? If you're going to kill me by fire, make sure there's a lot of water around and then I'm good. Go for it. Just have the fire in the water, neutralize everything. I survive. Move on. Mm-hmm. Very weird though. Yeah, I agree. I agree. That did not, that felt okay. I don't remember it feeling that way when I saw it in the theater. But I do this time. I just went, ooh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
That seems like, for a guy who's basically hiding from his pain, he's about to give himself the most literal pain he's ever had in his life. Why do you want to do that?
Oh, I know. And I guess I can't figure out what this movie was implying about his quality of life. Because it didn't really show you. Like, it showed him being drunk and not being able to produce a specimen that wasn't filled with booze or whatever, but it didn't really show you what's his day to day life like. And I couldn't help thinking that if it was going to end the way it ended for him, for Jerome, couldn't it have given me a downward spiral, you know, like instead of just this WTF moment.
Yeah. Cause it did seem sudden. I mean, it seemed like, all right, he's drinking all the time, but he doesn't seem completely despondent, miserable.
Yeah, like he could have gone on drinking. Could have gone on drinking or something. But I feel like what we were supposed to assume was that he was putting the period at the end of that sentence. He was the one saying, all right, I did what I wanted to do, which was to have my proxy Jerome get up into that jet and take off out of here. My work here is done. See you, world. I think that's what we were supposed to have felt from that. Because if we were to try to analyze, why didn't you seem more depressed the whole time? Well, I think maybe the plan, or at least the intent of the plan, was he would work really hard at getting all his skin exfoliated and peeing into bags and doing his job, you know, and then scrambling upstairs to look good for what's her name when she got there with what's his name, who seemed to have no problem with him always sitting. But anyway, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Or the weird glances. How about a kiss?
Yeah. Mm. How about that? Yeah. But none of that seems suspect.
Our brightest Three's Company.
It was
the brightest bulb in the freaking precinct could not read any of those cues. Right. But then, like, I feel like that was just his end game. I'm okay with accepting it as that, like him saying, all right, I did everything I wanted to do and I got him out of here. My namesake has moved on. I am out of here. And then he just killed himself. I'm okay with it.
I needed a little more reason for that. Like, and bear with me here, but imagine if Vincent and Jerome had been really enjoying each other's company. Yeah. However you want to fill in that blank. Like, really enjoying each other's company. And now...
You're suggesting...
I'm just saying, imagine if they had been... If there had been something. I'm not
telling Mr. Ripley?
I'm not saying Vincent needs to masturbate Jerome or something. Whoa. But give me a reason now that Vincent's leaving that Jerome is going to burn himself alive.
It was a little hard.
I didn't get it.
So if anyone out there wants to, I've always get asked when I had those cataract surgeries before them, when things got real bad with my vision, people always ask, what did it look like? And I now have a movie I can point you to and say, this is what it looked like. Go watch this movie and wait for the scene where he has to huck his contacts during the highway inspection. And then she wants to run across the freeway and look at the lights on the whatever the hell was going on over there, the stuff. Yeah. If you want to know what that looked like, especially out of my left eye when it was at its worst, what he saw is how I saw. It was that bad.
Wow. Because that scene took me out of the movie again because I'm blind. And when I take my glasses off, the world looks okay. I mean, it's blurry, but it doesn't look all twisted and scary. And by the way, taking my glasses off does not make cars sound loud.
That part.
Right.
And
so,
and have it kind of turn, like get all dizzy and stuff. None of that exists in my vision. But the actual effect of that car could be here, it could be there. That's how bad it got. That is why, without the miracle of modern science, I would be that crazy old man on a porch much earlier than expected, telling tales and stories. I wouldn't go in that mine shaft if I were you, that kind of guy. And they'd say, what's the matter with you, old man? I would look at him and the music would get weird and it'd zoom into my face and be pure white. That's who I would be. Mm. But Thankfully, the surgery's cleared it up.
Thank you for telling it, because I really, that scene, I would have just gone on saying, that's BS, boy. Yeah.
No, that felt right. Now, he didn't have cataracts. He supposedly had myopathy or whatever. Is that right?
Right. He was farsighted.
Farsighted, right? Yeah. Which, no, wait, it's nearsighted.
Nearsighted, because I'm nearsighted, and if I take my glasses off, I can operate indoors with no problem.
Yeah, because you're nearsighted, right.
Yeah.
He was having trouble at distance, right? I don't know what he was.
He was just blurry. I couldn't tell. Yeah.
But see, that was why it rang true to me, because mine didn't, it didn't care whether it was close or far. It was all just mush. It was awful. Terrible, terrible time. But hey, it's 2014. Fix that right up, man. 8 minutes in there, bzz, out.
And there again, how did that, again, 97? Mm. A laser surgery was already happening. Why not have him go through a bunch of more things than just the leg extensions to fix himself? It would have made the movie a lot more.
If he could wear contacts, likely he could have had laser surgery and it would have been fine. Sure. I mean, mine's not laser, but it was. But the principle remains the same. There were ways. Even if it was cataracts,
there'd be scars.
They could have fixed it in 97. Cataracts are about the same as they are now. So. They ignored a lot of that.
This is a future film, so he should have gotten his heart fixed. He should have gotten all sorts of things fixed.
They ignored a lot of that stuff for some weird reason. Also, he said he was 10 – so he told Uma Thurman, you know, with the feet, told her that he was 10K – he goes, I'm already 10,000 beats over my expected heartbeat limit. Right. And I thought, wow, 10,000. Then it started to hit me. No, wait a minute. That's like 2 days.
That's a few days, yeah.
Yeah, it's 2 days, even if you're like an amazing athlete.
It sounds like such a big number, but I guess, yeah, when you break it down to –
it's nothing. It's if you. So I did the math. 85 beats per minute on average for a guy 6'4", like my height. That's normal. If I add mine up, and I did check, by the way, I'm right at that, about 83 to 85. If you add all that up, that's like 2 days. It's like nothing.
You're making my case for this movie being very lazily written.
That part did seem like that jumped out, and I went, wait a minute, that seems weird. Because you have to understand there's going to be variability. There's no... They cannot predict to the beat where you're going to die, because a lazy fat guy sitting on a couch eating burgers all day. Well, his is going to end sooner if he has the same condition.
And that's why that's why I'm so laughing at the whole genetic testing at birth thing, because it would actually be more like you get genetically tested every, you know, or not genetically tested, but you get physically tested. You get a full body scan,
the physical,
every year or something.
They might be able to say, oh, you 85% chance of testicular cancer because it runs in your family or something, or those kinds of things, maybe.
Right.
But to go, you're going to be weak and wear glasses and you're going to suck. And, you know, like that seemed a little.
You're going to have a thin mustache and the boys are going to make fun of you.
Yeah, that was a stone too far, I think. Anyway.
Speaking of that, I got to get in one last trope.
All right, go. Hold on. Whoops.
Yay, sibling rivalry. I love sibling rivalry trope. It's so fun, especially when it's the point of the movie, or I'm sorry, the point of the entertainment of the movie. Mm. Like Thor and Loki in the Thor movies. Mm. Oh my gosh, that is so fun and funny and so on. How did this movie not get the sibling rivalry? It didn't even try.
Mm. All it was swimming. That's pretty much
it. That's all it was. It was just swimming.
Yeah. It was swimming.
I won't do the Blood Brothers thing. No.
You got some implying earlier that, you know, the new kid's the smarter one. The family photo, Ethan Hawke's way off in the corner, and the other kid's up front and center. And so there was maybe some of that underlying stuff, which I can always appreciate it when that stuff's handled in a more subtle way like that. But I agree. It wasn't really laid out very well. And by the way, I really like the lady who plays the mom. She's great on TV and movies.
Well, who is she? Because she looked really familiar. It's funny. I recognize the guy as being the bald guy from the skinhead from some kind of Wonderful.
Yeah, I can't find his name.
What are we talking about?
The mom, his mother, early in the movie. The guy. Now, the skinhead guy from Some Kind of Wonderful, I immediately that cued in on that.
Yeah.
And he's great. Oh, my gosh.
He is great. Everything.
The American version of Let the Right One In. I think it's just Let Me In or whatever, because here in America we shorten everything.
I remember,
He's the police detective in that, and he is fantastic in that movie. Really, I like that movie a lot, by the way. Everyone says, see the Swedish one. It's actually pretty
it's
good.
It's only scary if it's Japanese.
Yeah, I hate that.
In Gattaca, the mom was played by Jane Brooke.
Yeah, Jane Brooke. There she is. And you know her from a billion things.
I'm trying to see her.
You would know her from Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
You'd know her from Chicago Hope, Kindergarten Cop.
You remember Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead? I remember that movie,
but I don't remember her.
L.A. Law, I want to say. She played somebody. Yep, there it is. She was in...
Kindergarten. I do remember from Kindergarten Cop. Yeah. Right.
Do you remember Ed? That was the Truman Show other movie.
Oh, Ed TV.
No. Ed, the TV show, I think.
There was a TV show called Ed?
Yeah, it was. Let me see. Let me make sure I'm telling you the right thing. No, that was a movie. Sorry, that was Matt LeBlanc and a monkey that played baseball.
Oh, my
God. Yes, I do remember that.
All right, never mind. She's
she
in that.
She was in Sports Night.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, that's the one I remember
her
most from.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she's great. I really like her. I really like the dad. I could have used more of them just because I like those actors. But that's kind of a different problem.
The movie was hell-bent on Vincent's story and didn't really care to flesh things out.
No. I also noticed this, which you say is true. Any other jump outs before I go to clips? Or do you guys think we're ready for clips?
Clips.
All right, clips.
Yes.
Here's a clip for you. This is, let's see, what is this? I don't know what this is.
You keep your workstation so clean, Jerome.
Oh, it's Gore Vidal acting all chilled out. Here's some penis talk for you.
Jerome, never shy, pisses on command. Got a beautiful piece of equipment there, Jerome. Have I ever told you that?
Only every time I'm in here.
Occupational hazard. See a great many in the course of any given day. Yours just happens to be an exceptional example.
Dude, what the crap, dude?
Okay. It has just dawned on me.
What?
That he recognizes that it is a fake.
Oh, and he knew the whole time.
Equipment. Oh, wait.
How would that be a fake?
Because that's how you get away with a test where the guy looks at your junk.
Because he has to look at your wiener while you're peeing.
Oh, while you're peeing. I see what you're saying. Okay.
So he had some prosthetic wiener, and that guy saw it, and he knew. Because at the end, he was like, yeah, I've kind of known the whole time. And he was letting this slide.
For those of you listening who knew this all along, this is what I'm saying about this movie. There should have been some way for me to not spend the whole movie thinking, boy, the doctor wants to go down on
me. And it seemed like one of those things. It's funny because it seemed like one of those things where, oh, it's supposed to make you think they're talking about his penis, but it's gonna turn out to be his watch or his tie tack or something like that. Nope. Yeah. He really is talking about his penis.
Yeah, I don't know. I still am not quite sure what the hell's going on there, but. Anyway, here is the dad and the dude from Some Kind of Wonderful. Here's him.
No, Vincent Anton.
He may as well be scratching like a dirty
way to
name.
Cut out Maya Rudolph's only line in her first ever film.
That's true. I did. You know what? Because I think I didn't know it was her when I first did it, and then read that thing after and went,
yeah, just a half
back.
A second before, and you would have got, what would you like to name the baby?
Don't.
I'm weird.
Here's Ernest Dreaming of Space. Why did I write? Oh, there's nobody named Ernest.
Going to Mean Vern?
I just mean there's a dude earnestly thinking of space. Okay, so here you go.
Okay. What about you, Your Majesty? You're dreaming of space?
Yeah, you got $50.
Well, that's Ernest.
Oh, that's why I wrote
it's Ernest. Organized. Yeah.
Oh, shit. I don't know what's happening.
Got a spaceship?
Here's. I love that he was in the movie. I forgot he was in it.
I did too.
Totally forgot. All right. Tony Shalhoub or Shalhoub. Here he is, doing his thing.
What did I tell you? You look so right together, I want to double my fee.
We don't look anything alike.
It's close enough. When was the last time anybody looked at a photograph? You could have my face on your name tag, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, see?
He's great. I love Tony.
Is there anything you don't like him in? Name it, and I'll buy you lunch, because he's great in everything. Even poopy rolls. He's great.
I've looked up his pronunciation of his name to make sure I never say it wrong again.
What
and he
it?
Says, shh. Lube,
yeah, Shalhoub.
With an emphasis
does
on the
pause,
lube.
Does he pause that?
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. He says Shalhoub like that.
Shalhoub.
Yeah.
Shalhoub. Tony Shalhoub. Yeah, that sounds all right.
I will never get it wrong again.
I will find something that I didn't like him in. Hold on. I'm working on it here.
Because originally he said Shalhoub or something.
Because I never said his name aloud.
Shalhoub.
Shalhoub. All right.
I didn't like Cars. How's that? Does that count?
Oh, yeah, but he's great in Cars. That's my point. Yeah, is the movie's not great, but he's good in it.
That's true. Okay.
That first Cars Spy movie Kids isn't 3D. As bad as everyone says it is. Ooh, I hated Spy Kids. I really did hate Spy Kids.
I don't think he was good in Men in Black.
No, he was very shortly in that, though, right? He was the alien that shot him in the head a few times. He was a watch dealer or whatever.
No. That's my claim. I don't think he was good in that movie. Okay. I have spoken.
All right, thank you. Take that, Tony Shalhoub.
A cab driver. Did we see? Oh, it was the Bill Murray thing.
No, that was
Quick Change.
That is such a great
Quick Change.
Bill Murray is a
bank robber, dresses up like a clown, and robs a bank with Gina Davis and
I have never seen
Randy Quaid. It is so good.
I've never seen this. I didn't even know it existed.
Man, I need to watch.
It's really good.
When you sit in the back of a cab,
Shalhoub plays this cab driver that they can't understand.
Yeah. I thought you said when you said it, get in the back of a cab, I swore you were going to tell me it was like Scrooged and it was that New York doll guy.
Yeah.
He's driving the cab, but no, I don't even know what this clown rob a bank thing is.
Please do me a favor. No. You are not allowed to watch this movie until I bring it to your house and sit and watch it with you.
Okay.
This will happen. I want to watch Quick Change with Scott.
All right. That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a pee test.
There is more vodka in this piss than there is piss.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And on a related note, the bottle of vodka contains piss.
Yeah, everything is made of piss.
Or vodka. Or both.
Piss and vodka. I would have said, look, I'm paralyzed from the waist down. I can't control my pee.
Didn't you love that whoever designed these sets and all of this tech and whatever didn't stop and think, you know, how does technology actually work in 1997? Let's forget that. This thing just needs to say bad, like in big,
right.
I like how all of their little personal scanners flip like they got bad horizontal control. Did you notice that?
Yes,
like they right. do. Oh, you're like on pins and needles.
It's basically a slot machine.
Yeah, yeah.
I want you to name one appliance that you've ever owned that when it gums up, a bright red light starts flashing at you.
I can't think of one. Mm-hmm. They don't exist. You're right. They don't exist.
Yeah, nope.
Wait a minute. I have a power supply, UPS, uninterruptible power supply that blinks red when it's something wrong. I do have
my
that.
Shredder, actually, the red light comes on when it jams.
Oh, does it? Oh, my printer, yeah, if my printer jams, it does a red light, but it never
I'm
flashes
I'm talking about
me.
A bright red light and a little siren. And,
oh, a bright red light.
And an all caps word like bad.
Right. No,
also, you know what I may have just ruined this movie for me. Didn't he go when he was a janitor working for got $50? Mm-hmm. He went and stuck his finger on it that one time, remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the alarm went off.
The whole room started pulsing.
Did they not that not get recorded?
It
You would have figured out who that the supposed killer. Well, he wasn't the killer, but you would have figured out a long time ago. You had a sample in the machine.
No, but they did. They actually said that.
They knew
that their suspect used to work there as a janitor.
Oh, mm-hmm. I missed that bit then.
Because they kept saying, "Why would he come back here? He worked here several years ago, and he disappeared."
I remember that conversation, but it wasn't clicking with me that it was a. I guess I forgot when he pricked it. When he put his finger in there.
You know? Oh! I thought you were talking about his great equipment.
Yeah. They used to call it when they pricked it.
Uh-huh.
All right, here's exclusive to the show, everybody. I got exclusive audio proof and audio record of Brian Ibbett every morning before high school.
Waiting for something like this.
Right before high school, every morning, this is what Brian Ibbett would say.
And that's the way it was. Each day I would dispose of as much loose skin, fingernails, and hair as possible to limit how much of my invalid self I would leave in the valid world.
Yeah, every morning, right before gym class. That was Brian.
Right. All my loose skin. Put it in a jar.
Invalid. I like that they always said invalid and not invalid, because yeah. Very different.
Right. The emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Exactly. Here we go. I'm sorry. Egg. How you do that one? Exactly. No. Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. Thank you. Here is a great joke about an eyelash. This made me laugh. And the movie doesn't have a lot of laughs in it, so here's one.
They found my eyelash. When?
In the corridor.
Ah, well, it could be worse. They could have found it in your eye.
That's the only time I laughed. I thought it was a good joke.
It was a good joke.
Nice dry moment.
Why didn't this movie have more fun?
Yeah, it didn't want to have much fun. It's definitely a little dour. If that's a criticism, then I'll agree with that.
The future needs more wacky janitors and Scottish janitors, by the way. I don't know why I'm thinking of The Simpsons.
In the deleted scenes, there's also another couple things with Ernest Borgnine that also introduce and then tie up a different plot thread that's worth seeing.
That he's part of?
Ernest Borgnine's part of, yeah, like a little story, like a little introduction and then closing. It's funny though, the video quality on the deleted scenes is obviously from dailies, like recorded with a cell phone while over the shoulder of somebody watching the dailies.
Yeah, they never color correct that stuff.
What is up with that?
Yeah,
why is it like we knew we weren't going to use this scene, so we filmed it with a potato?
I think they film a lot of the stuff normally. They just don't do. They don't do any color correction or any of the sound editing or any of that. Yeah,
exactly.
I was Eric Van Skyhawk was visiting a couple of weeks ago, and he had some commercials he just finished for Nickelodeon, which is what he does for Nickelodeon. And he was showing me these ones I'd seen on TV already that looked amazing, polished, wonderful commercials. Then he put in a couple that looked really washed out and weird and filmed funny, and people's makeup didn't look right. And I go, "What is that?" And he goes, "Oh, that's just none of the post is done." So apparently, those things go through the ringer. Just color correcting and sound correction, and people dub over their lines again. I mean, it was a really interesting look at just even commercial work, how many passes that stuff goes through before it's ever finished. And it was appalling. So I think that's all this stuff is.
Appalling. I love it.
Yeah.
Like, we don't even have something. I don't know how this could ever be a commercial.
Terrible. Appalling even. All right. Here's the Going Home. Here's this Going Home.
So, of course, they say every atom in our bodies was once part of a star. Maybe I'm not leaving. Maybe I'm going home.
Okay, I got the impression that maybe this, and just maybe, and I couldn't find any proof of this, but this felt like a movie that maybe didn't have narration the first time, and later they thought,
Blade Runnerized it kind of thing.
Blade Runner, Dark City again had that, and that was never the director's want or need, and neither was Blade Runner. So if you get the director's cuts of either of those two movies, both narrations are removed. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the Kiefer Sutherland one and the other one, though. Well, whatever. Doesn't matter. Point is, I wonder if this one had that problem, because it did seem to kind of come up at places where we needed more explanation. It's not that I don't mind narration in a movie. I really don't. That's not – a lot of people have a problem with it. They think it's cheap and easy and just like a cop-out, but I'm fine with it. But I got the impression at the end that felt a little too sew this thing up, a little too poetic, and like maybe that was put in later.
For my money, the narration has to be done by somebody who has a good voice for it. And, I mean, let's face it, Ethan Hawke is 1 degree removed from Skeet Ulrich. And,
captain, man.
I'm just saying, he's already not
I agree.
He's not got a very good voice. Making him hold up all the narration of the film,
I can't think of his name all of a sudden. He's no, all right.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, McConaughey. That guy could do a sweet.
He's a great narrator, yeah.
I think McConaughey, though, is forcing us to like him as a narrator. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like every movie now, every TV show that he can be on. By the way, I'm only going to take this deal if you let me do some narration. Like, he didn't have a great voice. Like, it's just growing on you because of repetition.
Mm. I like Ethan Hawke a lot, though. I really want to see that movie that's out with the 14-year film thing that Linklater did.
Boys Life or something.
It's all good reviews. I've yet to read a negative one. That thing's the only 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's Metacritic of all places, which is always a lower score, no matter what your movie is.
Boyhood, I think.
Yeah, Boyhood. That's it. Yep. Is it? Yeah. I'm just gonna look this up.
Filmed over 12 years with the same cast. This film is a groundbreaking story of growing up as seen through the eyes of a child named Mason.
And that's got your Ethan Hawke.
Who literally grows up on screen before our eyes. Yeah.
And the thing I like about it, and everyone says about it, is that does never feel like a gimmick. It always feels real and good and whatever. And Ethan Hawke, you get to see him age 12 years.
So the movie,
the
movie that's getting advertised like, I don't know, like Desperation is called Interstellar.
Yeah, the new
it's coming out.
Christopher Nolan deal, yeah.
Right.
Desperation. I'm guessing you're thinking that they don't have what they've got, what it takes to have a good movie, so they've got it desperately.
I think it'll be fine. Now, do we feel that way? Because so far, Nolan is 100% knock it out of the park for everything in between the Batman movies. Mm-hmm. Like, he does this He had his Prestige, which was amazing after Batman Begins. Then he does his Batman Dark Knight deal. Then you got Inception, which was a freaking amazing, one of my favorite movies ever made. Then you got your latest Batman with the
Memento.
Then you got Memento was way older than any of these.
It's way older, but I'm just saying. Yeah, you know, so you can go a little. You can go a little bit before the first Batman.
Sure. Thing. Everything he's done that's been like his independent little idea, you know.
I can add some more elements. This is a Hans Zimmer score. This is an IMAX cameras were used. This is a film that was filmed all over the world. They went to Canada. They went to Iceland. I get it. But the commercial for Interstellar, it just screams, "Please see this on opening night before." I don't know what it is exactly about it.
I see what you're saying.
It's just like, the commercial.
I almost wish
it wasn't a commercial. I wish actually it just said, "You like Christopher Nolan, right?" Mm. And remember Matthew McConaughey just won an award. Yeah. Come see our movie.
I hope that it fulfills my expectations for what I think Christopher Nolan movies are, because they're pretty high. He's kind of outdone himself. He's the only guy that has ever and ever will give us a Batman versus Wolverine movie without actually giving us one with the, you know, with their costumes on. If you want to go see that, go watch The Prestige. Hey, guess what? Alfred and Black Widow are also in that damn movie.
Right.
That's the greatest superhero movie that is not a superhero movie ever made.
Well, and let me tell you some more, just a little bit more about Interstellar, because I'm refusing to watch any more commercials when they come on. I'm turning the channel. Yeah. I don't have channels. Anyway, just a few other little details, like, because you come away from the commercial going, "Oh, it's Matthew McConaughey and he's got a daughter." Okay. This movie has Anne Hathaway, Jessica Chastain, Ellen Burstyn, Michael Caine, Casey Affleck, Topher Grace, John Lithgow, Matt Damon, Wes Bentley, William Devane.
Wow.
Like, wow.
What's Lithgow doing? Is he outlawing Dancing on the Moon or something?
Oh, my gosh. What a cast.
Oh, my gosh. We are Ethan Hawke's age. I just wanted to point that out.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good Lord.
Let's say he's our age. How about that?
Captain. Oh, Captain, my Captain. Mm-hmm. There you go. All right. That's it for clips. And I did want to play one more thing, though. Scott Fletcher sent in a alternate intro that I thought I would share with you guys. So here's how this version went.
Gattaca! In a future where status is determined by genetics, a genetically flawed, invalid man conspires to game the system in order to achieve his lifelong dream. He meets and falls in love with a beautiful valid with a heart defect.
Wow. That was awesome.
Wow, it felt like...
Oh, what the... Sorry.
Like Stewie meets Jude Law.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Anyway. Thank you for the alternate ending. That's our alternate ending. Time for the checklist. Film Sack checklist goes like this. Jude Law is the best looking alcoholic ever. Check. Got it. Not a single shot of Uma Thurman's feet. Check. And finally, intro credits still make me think about all my tiny little body flakes. Check. Today's trek.
Body flakes.
Still crunchy in milk. Elizabeth Dennehy in this movie, also in our Star Trek connections this week, was a preschool teacher in this. Yeah. In TNG, she played Commander Shelby in The Best of Both Worlds and The Best of Both Worlds Part 2, the Borg doubleheader.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing gap bridging between two seasons.
One of the greatest Trek two episodes ever made.
Yeah.
Period. It's fantastic. Go back and watch it. It's on Netflix, everybody. Soundtrack grade, we give it an SBVN for suitable but very 90s. I felt like I was being 90-ified with the sweeping music. And I don't know quite how to put my finger on this except to say that it's starting to finally feel like we are out of that decade and that the things that still kind of kept holding up anyway are starting to not hold up. I don't know how else to explain it. It's weird.
So it was a Michael Nyman score, and he is responsible for the piano and some other like artsy films, and Gattaca. I guess I don't know exactly what they were going for, but one of the moments in this film where I was just wrecked. The two main characters go to see presumably what is depicted to you as a genius pianist playing the piano, right?
Yeah.
And they even go so far after the performance as to say something about how you have to have 12 fingers to play that.
12 fingers to play it.
Yeah, right. 12, yeah. Right.
Six fingers on each hand or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the whole time I'm listening to that, I'm thinking, well, that's kind of pedestrian piano. That's, I could have played that when I was 10. And I don't get it. Like, why didn't Nyman at least pick, either write something new that actually takes two people to play? Or pick something that is familiar and classical and hard, like the third movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, right?
Yeah.
That would have blown everybody away. It would have just been crazy town on the keyboard. And then I would have come away from it going, wow, that was really awesome. I see what they did there, instead of scratching my head like, yawn.
Yeah.
You know, and the music throughout the movie was like that for me. It was like, you're trying to be understated, but I don't go to a movie for understatement.
Yeah, some of it was a little overstated too. I feel like it was just kind of all over the map.
It was a heavy handed, like when you're listening to the clips, especially, and you've got the narration, there's some heavy handed music. The dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. It wasn't really my vibe, but it was okay. It wasn't the worst thing I'd ever heard. I just feel like we've aged out of it. It's Hans Zimmer's ruined everybody else. It's kind of what he's done. His stuff is pretty, pretty cool.
Hans Zimmer,
by which you measure other.
Yeah, now we are. Because he's done so much for the feeling of these movies, and the movies he's done that are so significant that you just go, well, what was this like before he did this exactly? You know?
Okay. But there's more. There's Michael Giacchino.
Yeah, he's good.
There's Stephen Jablonsky.
Mm-hmm. Good.
There's Howard Shore.
It's the new generation of dudes is what it is.
Yeah. Well, and they're not that new either. You know, they're all in their 50s and 60s, but they're just willing to fill up all of the available space of the movie theater with music, you know? And if you're not doing that nowadays, it doesn't sound right, because we're used to hearing Hans Zimmer.
Yeah. No, I love that guy. Yeah, there's that. All right. What else here? Oh, Twitter post. This is where you guys in 120 characters or less, 140. Sorry, I just made Twitter different. 140 characters or less. You get to sum it up. Let's start with Randy.
Gattaca, like a new girlfriend who inexplicably protects you from the consequences of lying to her about everything. Just shut up and kiss me, you imperfect bastard.
That was weird. It was so weird. Brian Ibbett.
Don't do it, you big liar. Yeah. Gattaca, a genius film that was a genuine pleasure to watch. Big thanks to the generous listener that sent these discs in. Gene.
Thanks, Gene. A.K.A. Dominic DeLeo. I'm not sure how to say his name.
Yeah, right. He couldn't fit Gene in there, so he's Gene.
Thank you, Dominic. Just handed to me. We got here what do we got here? The alternate title. And here's your option one, quote, do I have to prick my finger every time I come to work, unquote, or all our...
It's much better to prick your finger than to... Never mind.
Yeah, yeah.
George Carlin joke.
All our hybrids look like grandpa cars. I think we'll go with that one. Look at this. We got an email, one from Bolton, England. This is Dave Jones, not Davy Jones. He's dead, right?
Not David Bowie. Davy Jones is alive.
Is he?
Jones is alive.
Yeah, from the Monkees, yeah.
Why am I? I'm thinking of Davy Jones Locker, and he's dead. He's like the king of the dead.
Stop. Just stop where you are.
Here we go. Hi, all. Just a few fun facts about Drunken Master, the movie, and Jackie Chan in general. The little military guy at the end of Drunken Master posing for the photo op is Jackie's longtime collaborator, Bill Tung. He's his uncle in Police Story, or Super Cop, as we know it here, and is in a load of his other films as well. Chan said the outtake reel was the only good thing he took away from Cannonball Run, his first film for a U.S. market that he hated making. He hated making Cannonball Run. He used it at the end because everyone just kept going, every time.
Yeah. Sure.
That's the reason.
Let's see. So he started using this for the end of the movies, for all the movies he did, because he liked it so much in Cannonball Run. And that was 81. I don't know what version of Police Story you watch, but go back and see those outtakes. Holy shit. Those stunts are badass. Ibbett, you don't have to watch it in the corner of the screen on Netflix. Use the controller to select, or just click to watch it.
Yeah, I know he can do that, but what a pain in the butt.
Right. Two clicks, yeah. man. What are you asking us to do here? It's not like the free, was this the 40s?
No, I mean, I know you can do it. I did it. But
you're
going to
make me rewind my movies and go up and push a button on the screen? Yeah. Come on, man.
There's a button on your console television. You got to stand up and you got to unrecline your lazy boy and walk over to the TV.
Those are good days.
Punch a button.
Those are good days. I mean, now I'm starting to feel that way about, remember when you had to walk into a place and they had like racks of tapes and the movie you wanted to watch that night, you had to make sure it was there and you had to go rent it and take it home. What was that? What were we doing? That's the stupidest thing ever.
You wound.
It says, finally, and most awesomely, you can see the secrets of his stunts and his team in a film called Jackie Chan, My Stunts. I love that name. Featuring, amongst other things, massively padded shoes with a bit of talc for surprisingly realistic impacts. Watch it. It's phenomenal. It's available on YouTube. So stop what you're doing and go watch it now. Love the shit movies, though. Brian Jones in Bolton, England.
Love the shit movies.
Yeah, it's a shite. I want to watch that. That sounds great.
Yeah, I'll watch
that. I didn't know that existed, so I will watch that. Also, an email from Corey from Australia. He says, hello, fam, Zach crew. That's as much of that as I'm going to do.
Good day.
Okay, thank you.
Good day. Couldn't help but notice that you mentioned terrible Dane Cook movies in the past episode or two. And I thought I should just make a film recommendation for you to sack. Mr. Brooks. It stars Kevin Costner, Dane Cook, Demi Moore, and Marge Hendenberger, blogger, blogger. He wrote.
Marge Helgenberger?
Yeah, but he
put, oh, gotcha. He wrote it. He wrote it as you would say.
Yeah, he put Helgen blah, blah at the end. That's pretty funny.
Well done. Well
I think
done.
You All guys right. would have a great time with this one. Cheers, Corey from Australia. I am not familiar with that movie in the least. I don't know what's going on.
No, Mr. Brooks.
Yeah, huh. Mr. Brooks.
I'm looking it up.
Look that one up.
Mr.
We'll think about
Brooks
it. Next week was supposed to be Cujo, but it's not. It got pulled from streaming.
Aww.
It's out of there. Instead, we are watching Hard Rain.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
We just bought the money. I can't wait. I can't wait. Dude, they ride jet skis in a building. All right.
I'm going to watch it like in – I'm starting in 10 minutes from now. Like, I cannot wait to watch this movie.
Hard Rain, dude. Christian Slater, Morgan Freeman.
Make sure I make notes because I'm going to watch – I'm not going to wait until late in the week to watch Hard Rain.
Who's the main guy? Sheen? No, not Sheen.
Christian Slater. Christian Slater.
Okay. What am I thinking?
Christian Slater, Randy Quaid, Minnie Driver, Ed Asner.
Morgan Freeman. Don't forget. Morgan Freeman yells, we just want the money. It's the greatest line in film history.
I think there's something with Michael Douglas that that I'm confusing this with because it was a lot like it. It takes place in Japan, right?
No, this takes place in some town in the Midwest or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like
I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, I love how you have – I like the even more that you don't know what Hard Rain is because you're going to have a ball with this one. It's great.
I can't wait. But, yeah, I'm really surprised – Black Rain. Black Rain was the one with Michael Douglas, 1989.
Racist Rain. Got it.
We got some other
Chocolate
really...
Rain.
Let's watch that. Yeah. Let's do a film sack about that 4-minute YouTube video.
Please.
We got some great shows coming up. Like, we're going to watch Surf Nazis Must Die.
Yep.
We're going to watch Battle Beyond the Stars. We're going to watch.
Not on Netflix anymore.
I've checked them all. We're going to watch King Solomon's Mines.
How come you skipped over Day After Tomorrow? I want to see that.
Because we are going to watch that, but I was naming the ones that are streaming on Netflix.
Oh.
That was sent to us as a special aside.
All right.
King Solomon's Mines. I've been wanting to watch this with you guys on FilmSack for years, and it is finally streaming. I'm so excited.
I don't even know what it is.
King Solomon's Mines?
No idea.
Oh, that's the...
It's an Alan Quartermain film with Richard Chamberlain and Sharon Stone.
Then I'm in.
Yeah.
John Rhys Davies.
It's Indiana Jones light.
Yeah. That's great. By the way, if you are interested in Ken Burns documentaries to the level I am, which is complete adoration.
Nobody
and
is
enough,
interested in Ken Burns documentaries to the level you are.
I love them. I absolutely.
Ken Burns, maybe. Even Ken Burns doesn't watch his own stuff as much as
I mean,
watches.
I'm driving him up a banana wall with all the things I'm saying. His new documentary about the Roosevelts, starting with Teddy all the way up to Eleanor and the other one, who's the Theodore. Or no, starting with Theodore and then moving all the way up to
FDR.
Is supposed to be incredible, amazing, and that starts tonight on PBS. So tune in. Watch that, won't you? I don't know why they don't need me to plug it, but I just love his documentary so much. I can't wait for a new one. There's that. All right. That's going to do it for us. I think that's everything. Hold on. Check my thing. Yeah, that's everything right there. Be here next week for Hard Rain, and you'll find out who just wants the money next week here on the show. That's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is the website. Go there. Partake in the comment forum stuff. That stuff's always fun. Have a big conversation. We like it. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com on Twitter. We are at Filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes. We also like that. And anywhere podcasts are distributed, that'll do it for us, for me, for Brian, for also the other Brian, who'll be back next week, and for Randy.
Yes, sir.
Bye.
Get well, Brian Dunaway.
Yeah, go shave. Don't shave over that weird scar. That's gross.
We love you, buddy.
We love you, buddy.
Love you.
I don't know why I said...
is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.